Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. It's a real pleasure to have you here on Close Up Radio. We thank you for joining us. We're also excited to welcome a very special guest, forensic psychiatrist Dr. A.E. Daniel, M.D., live and direct from Columbia, Missouri. He's extraordinary, top-notch, highly sought-after forensic psychiatrist, kicking off an exclusive close-up radio in-depth series with us starting today, and we look forward to that. So we invite you to follow over the next several weeks along with us as we learn more about Dr. Daniel's extraordinary work, but also the application of his work. And also, he just received some exciting news as far as his new book, and it shares his knowledge and expertise. That's really what inspired him to write his book, Suicide in Jails and Prisons, Preventative and Legal Perspective, a guide for correctional officers, mental health staff, experts, and attorneys. And that is now available on pre-order on Amazon as of today. He's all excited, and we're all excited for him. You know, he says that the work that he does as a highly sought-after forensic society and has been doing for over 40 years offers significant amount of experience focused on prison populations. The inmates are continually at a potentially increased risk of taking their lives, he says. With his exclusive perspective on correctional psychiatry and the psychology of suicide, he's committed to saving lives by increasing public and professional awareness, applying innovative approaches along with vital recommendation really that addresses, improves, and minimizes the risk of suicide among incarcerated individuals. And in a career spanning over four decades, Dr. Daniel's dedicated research and advocacy work have earned him considerable recognition in the field of forensic psychiatry. And today, he's established himself as one of the world's foremost experts in suicide prevention and intervention strategies. He is known as an expert consultant in suicide-related lawsuits in the United States as well. And according to Dr. Daniel, suicide in jails and prisons are mostly preventable. He notes a variety of strategies that should be considered. For instance, correctional officers and mental health professionals should be aware of the emotional and mental health needs of inmates. As I mentioned, he wrote this incredible book, which we'll talk about as well, Suicide in Jails and Prisons, Preventative and Legal Perspective, a guide for correctional officers, mental health staff, experts, and attorneys. Available as of today on pre-order on Amazon. Truly, he says, the bottom line with it all, 40 years of experience, his hope is to share his personal and professional knowledge and expertise on inmate self-injurious behaviors and how we can save their lives. The website, PrisonSuicideExpertWitness.com, that's PrisonSuicideExpertWitness.com, is the website to connect with forensic psychiatrist Dr. A.E. Daniel, M.D. My pleasure to welcome him as we kick off again our exclusive close-up radio series. Dr. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us here on the program today as we kick off the close-up radio series. An honor and a pleasure to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jim.
You're very welcome, and congratulations on that exciting news about the book being available with the pre-order on Amazon. I know it's a very exciting day for you today, isn't it?
Yes, indeed, indeed. It is the culmination of my work. Particularly, I began writing this book in January 2021, and
yeah.
Today I'm able to hold the book as the printer-proof copy so that I'm excited to release it within the next few days.
That is so exciting. And again, congratulations. You know, writing a book
Thank
is
you.
Not necessarily the easiest task. It could be therapeutic. It could be cathartic. But again, congratulations on that. I'd love to sort of delve in a little bit about your, I'd love to find the inspirational journey of our guests. What makes them tick? What makes them decide to do what they do? What are some of the inspirational, you know, journeyman moments that they have that point them in the direction of doing the work that they do and do so well? Can you share with us your compelling background and how you decided, what inspired you and pointed you in the direction of doing this extraordinary work, Doctor?
Well, basically, I was trained as a psychiatrist in India at the National Institute of Mental Health and Neurosciences in Bangalore, India. Then I emigrated to United States in 1974 and continued my training in psychiatry at the University of Missouri, Columbia. Then thereafter, I joined the Department of Mental Health for the state of Missouri as a staff psychiatrist and worked as a general staff psychiatrist and, of course, later assumed some responsibilities as an administrator and became the chief executive officer of what is known as Mid-Missouri Mental Health Center. Then in 1992, I actually left the state system and began my private practice in psychiatry, particularly in child and adolescent psychiatry, and worked in a private hospital in Columbia, Missouri. But unfortunately, that hospital closed, leaving me high and dry in terms of finding a location to practice. At that point in time, I was appointed as the director of psychiatric services for the Missouri Department of Corrections. When I began working at the, for short form, DOC, Department of Corrections, I came across a phenomenon in which the inmates thought about killing themselves, or I was asked to consult on them to provide some intervention and treatment. Then it kindled my interest, what makes a person take his life. Of course, I have studied about suicide in my general curriculum, but this was direct on-the-spot experience of dealing with inmates who are actively thinking about taking their lives. Sometimes we think about them making an attention-seeking statement or manipulative behaviors. So I thought maybe there is something beyond that. So I decided to look into it. I was intrigued by this phenomenon. I asked my director of the department to give me permission to review the files of inmates who killed themselves during the previous 10 years. That is, I began work there in 1999. So I had this idea of doing some research, some review. So I asked the director to give me the permission to look at the files of people who killed themselves during the preceding 10 years. And he was gracious enough to grant me that privilege. And fortunately, the department kept good records of those who took their lives. So I have collected about 37 inmates' file, and of course I hired a research assistant. We both of us began looking into the characteristics or the profile of these inmates, and after collecting the data, began analyzing them, and we found out certain particular characteristics were significant in their lives. More importantly, about 90% of these people had an identifiable psychiatric disorder. which could be depression or major depressive disorder or bipolar affective disorder or schizophrenia and anxiety disorders, etc. So I again looked very carefully at what is the specific mental state of these individuals at the time of commitment, committing the act. I found out they basically were dealing with severe depression, but more importantly, they were in a state of hopelessness and helplessness. When an inmate or a detainee deals with a severe depression coupled with a state of hopelessness and narrowing of interest in their daily life, in their activities, then that is the most vulnerable period. So I have published the characteristics of those 37 individuals in a peer-reviewed journal. Subsequently, I looked at various populations, particularly when I worked at the Department of Corrections for the next 7 or 8 years, we had about 17 or 18 people who killed themselves. Because of my special interest in this area, I was assigned to do what is known as post-mortem review or the psychological autopsy of these individuals and make recommendations what went wrong, based upon what went wrong in terms of any policy changes or procedural changes or program changes. So basically, generally speaking, in jails and prisons, after a suicide occurs, they conduct what is known as psychological autopsy or morbidity mortality review. So based upon these administrative steps, we find out something specifically went wrong here. For example, the officers did not follow the prescribed policies and procedures, and that may have direct link into the situation where the inmate felt compelled or felt driven to take their lives. So I have made recommendations that we have instituted policies and procedures. Of course, I don't claim that I was the first to institute these policies and procedures, but I was able to tweak or refine these policies and procedures for the Missouri Department of Corrections. And by the time I left the system, we had a fewer number of people taking lives. Again, it is important to make note that we cannot prevent all suicides. That is bound to happen. So, but we can prevent most of the suicides if we are, this is one of the basic principles I have identified in my book, basically we can prevent suicide if the correctional staff, including the mental health professionals, are perceptive about the emotional and mental needs of these individuals and behavioral changes, as well as they follow the policies, procedures, and practice. So that's where I am, and subsequently I have published quite a few papers, and now I have this book. So that's the story of my interest.
Yeah, and the interest is there, and what an inspirational journey you've had leading yourself to understand and appreciate that this is work that's in your DNA. You have to do this work. You're meant to do this work that you love so much. Let's define and break it out for our audience, your role, maybe a little bit more, as a forensic psychiatrist. Tell us a little bit more about that and some of the extraordinary work that you do day to day.
Okay. forensic psychiatry is a sub-specialty of psychiatry. Forensic means anything which comes before the legal arena. And particularly in psychiatry, we are dealing with issues which confront the court. It could be in the arena of criminal area where someone commits a criminal offense and the judge or the attorneys are concerned about the mental state of the person who committed an offense. So the fundamental issue in that case is that, is this individual competent to stand trial? Based upon the Anglo-Saxon jurisprudence, a person has to be competent to stand trial. So the fundamental question comes before the court. Maybe it is raised by the judge, maybe it is raised by the individual attorneys. Sometimes they are agreed upon by prosecution and the defense attorneys. They will raise the issue of competency to stand trial. So who is the best person to provide that opinion is basically a psychiatrist, but more recently it is the forensic psychiatrists who are specially trained to evaluate individuals like that to come to the conclusion whether the defendant is competent to stand trial or not. So that's one area. The other area, of course, insanity defense. Defendants would be claiming that they were insane, legally insane, not responsible by reason of mental disease or defect. In that situation as well, the forensic psychiatrists have a crucial role to play. On the civil side, you have claims by individuals who have suffered work stress, work accidents, which basically addresses the workers' compensation, or if the work incidents cause them personal injury, there may be a personal injury claim made before the court or the special agency of the state, the Workers' Compensation Agency. So in that, those kind of situations, attorneys representing the claimant may refer the individual to a forensic psychiatrist to determine the mental psychiatric diagnosis, the mental state, but more specifically, whether any psychiatric conditions or mental state is caused by the specific event at work or a specific accident, for example, automobile accident. So in these situations, the causation of the psychiatric problems is the fundamental issue that is to be, the causation determination is finally a legal decision, but the psychiatrist, the forensic psychiatrist, can provide input into the nexus between the accident or between the work injury and the mental state. So that's the civil area where the forensic psychiatrist is called upon. And then the forensic psychiatrist may be called upon to on a larger scale to opine on issues related to individuals who are committing terrorist activities or sexual harassment, employment discrimination. All of those general areas may be the focus of inquiry or evaluation and testimony by forensic psychiatrists. Then there is another area which I want to highlight is what is known as expert witness practice, which is basically all forensic psychiatrists can be experts in the topic they are concentrating on or with regard to the specific area in which they have evaluated an individual. So they could be, they can function as an expert in that case with regard to the specific question they have evaluated on. but experts can be, by definition, in we all know, or most of us know, that experts become experts by virtue of their skill, education, training, experience, and expertise. What does an expert do? He or she provides specialized and technical knowledge to the trier of fact, which is the judge or the jury, on a fact which is beyond the purview of the layman jury. So the experts have the critical role of imparting specialized knowledge which is required to determine a fact under consideration in a lawsuit.
That's so essential. That's a beautiful way that you've broken that down for us, Doctor. What are some of the things, and there are many, and again, we have a wonderful breadth of questions we'll be asking over the course of our presentation here, our episodes. I encourage folks to go to prisonsuicideexpertwitness.com to connect with our very special guest, Dr. A.E. Daniel. What do you think are some of the things, and you've pretty much been laying them out beautifully thus far, what are some of the things that distinguishes you from other forensic society, forensic psychiatrists, in terms of obviously your approach, your methodology, the way you look at everything? What are some of those things that have that set you apart from your perspective? I know that's difficult to answer sometimes when you're talking about yourself, but there are some things in your approach that might stand out from your perspective.
All right. In my field, particularly the correctional mental health and psychiatry, which is a sub-area of forensic psychiatry itself, even though it is gaining prominence in the academic world at this time. But as a forensic psychiatrist dealing with suicide-related cases, what I do is I look at all of the facts and figures pertaining to that case. And of course, the person is deceased, so you cannot evaluate that individual. What we have is a collection of records. The records consist of jail records dealing with the criminal behavior, the convictions, and the jail movement of the person, etc. But on the other side is the jail mental health records of the deceased. Then we have the jail medical records. Then we have a whole slew of records which are gathered through depositions, through interrogatories, through specific requests made by the attorneys. So my fundamental approach in dealing with this case, this kind of case, is to review each and every record available. Let me give you a minor anecdotal situation. Back in 1988, I was hired to be an expert on a particular case, and I did review all of the records available with regard to that particular case, but I failed to review one particular page which provided the crucial information connecting the individual's lack of involvement in that situation. Somehow I overlooked it. So on the witness stand, I was asked about that particular document, and I had to admit that I did not review the case. Of course, that changed the entire course of the the lawsuit and the outcome of the lawsuit. At that point, I decided, no matter what, in my rest of my life, I'm going to review every piece of paper that is brought before me to do the analysis and study which is required under Rule 26, which is the rule required of experts in similar cases. So that set me in on the right path of reviewing each and every piece of paper and information relevant to the case. So that was a lesson that I have learned over the three decades ago.
That's incredible. It's extraordinary. It really is. From your perspective, how has forensic psychiatry changed over time, Doctor? I'm sure in many different ways, on different levels.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that particular question during the last several weeks. I came up with two answers. The forensic psychiatry, of course, we have all kinds of technological advances, the electronic medical record system, etc., etc. But beyond that, the input by the forensic psychiatrists are accepted by attorneys and the judges. So acceptance by the legal decision makers is an important thing that I have come to realize over these years. That's one. And number two is the forensic psychiatrists are sought after for providing input into any legal decision making. And of course, there are, you know, lots of forensic psychiatrists who are doing the academic work and writing and publishing, etc. But the two most important things that forensic psychiatrists have become more available and their input is accepted by the court system. Of course, there will be forensic psychiatrists experts on both sides of the case. Of course, it is a fact finder, the jury or the judge. They will make the decision whether one particular forensic psychiatrist's opinion is more credible, more acceptable in determining the fact at issue in that case. So these are the things that I have experienced changing and making progress during the last 30 years or so.
That's extraordinary. We're speaking today on this episode, part one of our series together with Dr. A.E. Daniel, and he's extraordinary, Daniel Forensic Psychiatric Services. If you would like to connect, you can go to the website, PrisonSuicideExpertWitness.com. That's PrisonSuicideExpertWitness.com. And once again, we're very excited to let you know that you can do an Amazon pre-order of his new book, Suicide in Jails and Prisons, Preventative and Legal Perspective, A Guide for Correctional Officers, Mental Health Staff, Experts, and Attorneys. And he really hopes, and he does so beautifully, share his personal and professional knowledge and expertise on inmate self-injurious behaviors and how lives can be saved. He'll be back with us on our next episode coming up on April 27th, Wednesday, April 27th at 2 p.m. Eastern, and continuing thereafter, and we invite you and welcome you to join us then. Dr. Daniel, thank you very much for joining us on this episode. A wonderful conversation, and I appreciate your time very much.
Thank you, Jim.
You're very welcome. We'll chat again on the next one and look forward to the continuation. You have a terrific day. And thank you for joining us as well, everybody. I'm your host, Jim Masters. Thanking you for your time this time. Till next time. And stay tuned. We'll be back momentarily with another amazing guest on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, have a great day. Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.